The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Great to be together. As always, thank you for tuning in. Please do your best to visit the key sites and follow track around to them. Ed Martin, excuse me, ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com, at Eagle Ed Martin. That's what I started to say, at Eagle Ed Martin on X. Ed Martin Live on Facebook, and especially visit phyllisschlafly.com and sign up for the daily email, the daily wink. Again, proamericareport.com, check it out. We have a lot to cover today, and one of the major things that is happening, of course, is heading into the weekend. Next week is a Super Tuesday when President Trump and others, Joe Biden has a bunch of primaries too, but that should be it for any debate. I mean, it's not really a debate now, but that's coming up next week in a lot of states, 14 or 15 states. Okay, little different subject. I was thinking about talking about lawfare. Donald Trump on Friday was in court in federal court in Florida over the records retention case, dragging everyone into court again and again and again. And there's lots of news there. And I don't know, it doesn't interest me enough. I'm kind of tired of it. And I want to try to talk about a different subject with you. You know, with my listeners, I have spoken about topics and concepts, and I get a lot of help from you all by your response. For example, the narrative machine, I call it. The narrative machine is how big government, big tech, and big media decide on a message, and they work it up, and they just pound the message into us. And a lot of the country believes what they're told. I had one of my listeners who told me, what about big business? And I thought, yeah, maybe got to add them. I mean, I like to say big tech, big media, big government, but big business joins in too, right? They really do. A lot of times it's the big corporations or it's pharma that influences the narrative machine. So it's the bigs. It's the bigs. Andrew Breitbart did know something back when he was naming his websites big government, big Hollywood, all this kind of stuff. So, but it gets me back to Andrew Breitbart. I believe Andrew Breitbart is often credited with saying the following phrase. I'm not sure it's original to him, but he kind of popularized it in the last 20 years. He would say, culture is upstream from politics. Culture is upstream from politics. Now, I want to concede the truth of that statement insofar as America, just stick to America. I don't know the rest of the world. I don't think it can apply everywhere, but just for America, culture is upstream from politics. Seems, based on my reading of history, even though I don't trust what I read, fake history, it seems common to me. But in general, what I would say is it looks like it was true. In 1776, culture was upstream from politics. The culture was very Christian. It was very independent minded. And people decided that they were going to construct their politics based on the culture. You know, it's the old thing, the Franklin and others, John Adams, were attributed with talking about the founding and the Constitution and saying, you know, it's for a virtuous people. The system is set up for a virtuous people. The culture has fostered in this grouping of people a desire for independence, sure, but also a system of government that diffuses power, that that is just distrustful of centralizing too much, et cetera, et cetera. That was the culture. Culture was upstream from politics. You can see the same thing through the 1800s. You can see it at various times. See, I think you can still hang with it. I'm okay with hanging with it. I can even think that, you know, the kind of culture, the Protestant work ethic, the Horatio Alger up from your bootstraps and the GI Bill after World War II, this sort of anyone can pull themselves up. That feels like the culture informed the politics, meaning the culture was everyone wants to do it. They want a chance. And so the politics was responsive to that. However, I believe that the great shift happened around the time of the Great Society, the Lyndon Johnson expansion of government into the social network, into the social welfare business dramatically. And I think that's when the shift happened. And so by the time you get to the year 2000, let's say, and certainly by today, but let's say 25 years ago, at the end of the Clinton era, government has grown. And it's grown so centralized and so powerful that it is now telling the culture what it will be. So the politics, Roe v. Wade, Doe v. Bolton in 1973, that makes up out of whole cloth an idea of how abortion could be a right, makes it up. And the culture is following behind it. People are pro-choice, so-called. They're pro-abortion, but that's the culture of America following behind. After the Great Society and this explosion in welfare and this explosion in government centralization, the administrative state is exploding. The judicial activism is exploding. Remember, in 1967 or 8, we get no-fault divorce. And now the role of government in defining the family is exploding. We have family courts that are deciding who gets custody. We have divorce courts deciding how to structure divorce and alimony and palimony and everything else. We have more and more of a role of government in housing because of loans, more and more of a role of government in terms of universities, again, because of the loan system. And so by the time you get to, let's call it 2010, maybe 2 years into Obama, we've seen the healthcare, Obamacare has happened. And we have the bailouts that happened. We're in the middle still of the wars that are just costing a fortune and causing, again, taking out of the, in order to pursue, oh, this is a big one. In order to pursue the world trade, it was George W. Bush that let China into the World Trade Organization and allowed them to stay in as a developing nation or whatever that was. And so all of a sudden, by then you've got China taking away our jobs. It's the politics that are taking away the culture of the Heart Belt, the Heartland, and the Rust Belt. So that you get all the way down to today. And when the difference maker is in 1776 and on through probably till, you know, the late in last century, you had a government that was small enough in the sense that it wasn't intrusive enough that culture could drive it. By the way, I'll drop a quick footnote here. More and more, it seems likely that the CIA and others and the government intelligence was running Hollywood, telling Hollywood what propaganda to put out. And do you think they limited themselves just to propaganda against the Soviets? Did they really not want propaganda against the Americans? Maybe to make them patriotic, rah, 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 fight a war. But certainly, for example, in the post 9/11 era, rah, 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 fight a couple of wars. And we were fed that propaganda on all for different fronts. So here's what I'm saying. At this point in history, and this may be an ending to the Republic. It may be a sign of the demise of a Republic. I'm not defending it. I'm describing it. At this point, you say to yourself, politics is upstream of culture. Politics is upstream of culture because what the politics has decided on family life, on health care, on education, on world affairs, on military, the politics has decided how those will operate in our community. The politics is driving what the agenda is. The border is wide open because the federal government is allowing it. And the culture is becoming more and more anti-immigrant and threatened by this. It's not ideal. It's not ideal to say, let's say you run your household and you decide to let strangers wander into your house. Your kids and your adult children and your wife, or in my case, my wife, are not going to be comfortable with that. It's going to make them uneasy. And after a while, it's going to make it less and less acceptable to have any meaningful immigration. So we're in the position where politics is so upstream from culture, and you don't have to go far. Again, it's not the culture that stopped praying. It's the laws that said you can't pray in school, and we're going to abide by some dramatic separation of church and state, et cetera, et cetera. And you can say, well, they should have stood up and fought. Okay, maybe. But if you look at how it played out, the politics, meaning the government, was so upstream from culture with such strength that didn't have a chance. I mean, a culture still exists. It's right now that the culture in America is less and less recognizable from what we had preferred, what we were thinking we would be, and what we were for a long time. However it's shifted, this isn't about rock and roll music, or even it's not just about apps on your phone. It's about who's driving the culture. And the driver of the culture is politics. It's upstream. And if you don't see that, it's a cop-out, to be honest. And so when people say, oh, I'm not going to be in politics, I'm going to go be a writer, I'm going to persuade the society. Nonsense. You're not persuading anything. Because if it's not acceptable in the society, you're not going to be popular. You might persuade 10 people, but the politics is going to swamp you out. If you want to go be a university professor, there'll only be a few islands left, Hillsdale, Steubenville, Ave Maria, you know, a couple of places that are conservative. Otherwise, you get swamped out. Politics is upstream from culture, and you can feel that. All right, that's what you need to know. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Great to be together. We have an author with us, a man who has been a historian, a sociologist, has written 26 books involved in all kinds of aspects of things. This newest book came out in the fall, Unbreakable Spirit, Rising Above All Odds. And the author is Rainier Zeitelman. How are you, Dr. Zeitelman?
I'm great. Thank you.
So you've written 26 books. How do you decide to write this book, focusing on people with disabilities and how they succeed? What made you write this one?
Because I hate this victim mentality. Today, almost everyone want to be a victim, especially with young people. I'm a victim of capitalism. I'm a victim of sexism. I'm a victim of racism. And I don't like this victimhood mentality. I think it makes people helpless. And so I wrote this book against victim mentality with portraits of 20 very successful disabled people. I will tell you, I'll give you an example.
Yes.
Someone born in the United States, 1930, and he was black, what was, of course, a much bigger issue in 1930 than it is today. He was born in the poorest neighborhood of his hometown. He never met his father. His mother died when she was 31 years old. His brother died in front of his eyes when he was 6 years old. And with 7 years, he became blind. Do you know this man?
You're going to tell me I do, I think, right?
Yes, it's Ray Charles.
Wow.
Ray Charles, according to the official Billboard list, is the most successful male singer in history, even more than John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and others. And, you know, he could feel like a victim, being blind, being black, and poor, and so. But he never felt like a victim. And this is the secret of the success of the successful people. And I have a lot of stories in this book. Another one is also an American. His name is Eric Weinmeier. Eric Weinmeier was the first blind man to climb the Mount Everest. But this was not enough. I spoke with him. After he climbed the Mount Everest, he climbed the seven summits, the seven highest mountains on seven continents. And I spoke with another one who has no arms. He's born without arms, but he's the most successful hornist in the world. And even with a gallerist, was almost blind when he opened his first very, very successful gallery. So there are a lot of stories in this book. And It's important, as far as I see it, for two reasons. First, it's a motivating book for everyone, not only for disabled people, but if you ask yourself the question, if these people could be so very, very successful, and you, hopefully, you have two legs, two arms, you are not bound to the wheelchair, you are not blind, you are not dead, and what is the reason why you can't be successful? There is no reason. It's a kind of motivational book on one hand, and on the other hand, it's, I think, against this victimhood mentality. Let me add something to the story of Ray Charles. Of course, right. Ray Charles had also some problems in his life. He was addicted to drugs, to heroin for 10 years. And after the police found out and they asked him to give the name of his drug dealer, and he refused to do it because he said, I didn't take it. It was not the fault of the drug dealer. And he added something. I did not take the drugs because I'm black, and not because I'm blind, and not because I'm poor. It's only my own decision. And you know, this is the attitude of successful people.
We're talking with Dr. Rainer Zeitelman and his book. We're mentioning Unbreakable Spirit, and I want to encourage. He has written nearly 30 books. So one of the ones I believe I spoke to you on the show about, but I have two on my shelf. Is one is In Defense of Capitalism and How Nations Escape Poverty. Dr. Zeitelman's long career was in communications, in a way, in print media, and then built his own business consulting and working with companies all across the world. I do want to ask you, though, about I saw that you wrote in The Wall Street Journal about the space economy and the sort of, and we have lots of news about Elon Musk and other things. Tell me about why that matters. Why does it catch our imagination? Why did you write about that? And it's a similar kind of thing. It's if you're limited, the way I'd say it is, if you're limited by being a victim or limited by what people tell you the limitations are, you won't try anything. And that's the opposite of, I think, the American spirit, but also it's the opposite of what you refer to as the sort of market forces. And tell us about that.
Yes, because you know, I'm a huge fan of Ronald Reagan, who was right. for me the greatest president ever in the latest history of the United States. And Ronald Reagan, what a lot of people don't know, he had a speech. This was now exactly 40 years ago when I wrote 40 years before I wrote this article in the Wall Street Journal, and this was about private spaceships, and to that he allowed companies or he cut regulations that made it difficult for private companies to have space launchers. And what he predicted, Ronald Reagan, 40 years ago, is that the future is also not only on the Earth, but also in space for private entrepreneurship, private companies. And you see how far visioned Ronald Reagan was, because this is what happens today with, for example, SpaceX from Elon Musk, but this is not the only one. What I said in this article in the Wall Street Journal, in the last 10 years, we had $300 billion investment in the space economy. And we have now almost 2,000 companies, private companies, who want to go to space. And I think this will make America great again, or made America great again, also this relation. It's not government. You know what? The government, yes, they were successful. You remember John F. Kennedy's great speech in 1961, his moonshot speech. And the United States were the first one to go to the moon. But after this 50 years, there was not a huge progress. And why not? Because of government. The government is slow in most cases, slow and expensive. And private entrepreneurs are fast, and they make it much cheaper. Today, this spaceship from Elon Musk is much, much cheaper and much, much better than every spaceship ever built by the government. And to bring it both together, my book about the disabled people and this topic, you are correct. They have two things together. I think America was so successful, the greatest nation ever. You know, I'm a big fan of the United States, not as it is today, but what were the United States, for example, in Ronald Reagan's time? What were the right. United States for decades? Because of two reasons. First reason, capitalism. This is why I wrote books like In Defense of Capitalism, or now there's a new edition of The Power of Capitalism. So this was the first reason, capitalism. And the other reason is because of an attitude. The attitude, I can do it. I'm not the victim. I'm the master of my own destiny. And this is for me, I call it the American spirit. This is right. what attracted people from so many countries. For example, I'm a big fan of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was yes. biggest bodybuilder in right. the world, who was governor of California. Maybe this was not his best job, but he was a movie star, yep. one of the best paid movie stars. And he came from a simple family in Austria.
Right, right.
And he didn't. This attitude is yeah. what made America so successful.
Well, I thank you. And unfortunately, I'm out of time, but I thank you. Your voice is wonderful. Your voice on this topic, and especially as an observer of America and seeing it with a sophistication and communicating about it, I think it's very important. So thank you for coming on our program. Dr. Rainer Zeitelman and his book, I will put a link up on social media, his recent book, but also his column, his writing, which about 10 days, 2 weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal. And again, his book is available everywhere you get books. I saw it over on Amazon. Unbreakable Spirit, Rising Above All Odds. Don't be a victim. So we got to take a break and we'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. So I saw on Substack my good friend Paul Ingracia writing, and he was writing with a man whose name I've seen before. I think he over at American Greatness, where he writes, and some other places. And his name is Josiah Lippincott. He himself, I discovered, has his own Substack, which I'll put links to. I think it's correct me. I think it's at Lippincott. I guess I might have said Scott in there. Lippincott. He's a former Marine. He's doing his doctoral degree over at Hillsdale, which means he's not only smart, but also smart in a way that knows where to study, and writes with Ingracia, in this case, a piece called Draining the Pentagon Swamp, which I'll get to. So first of all, welcome, Josiah. How are you, sir?
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on, Ed. I'm doing great.
Well, let me ask you before I get to it about studying for your PhD and how you ended up at Hillsdale, which means it was a safe place to be able to think critically. Yeah. But you probably thought about going different places. You probably thought to yourself, how'd you get from being a Marine, which means the knuckles automatically drag and, you know, you look for a fight every Friday right. and Saturday night to doing your PhD. Give us a little bit of that path.
Yeah. So I became aware of Hillsdale as a young man in high school, and I attended there for my undergrad degree.
Okay.
And then while in the Marine Corps, I had an idea for what has turned into my doctoral dissertation, which I'm working on now. And Hillsdale was just the obvious place to go. It is by far the best college in America. And in a way, it's part of a very small number of places which actually teach. And that's a good thing in the case of those who go to the college, but a problem for academia as a whole. But absolutely, Hillsdale is a phenomenal place.
You whet my appetite. What is the idea that you had for your thesis? Can you tell me, or do you have to wait till you finish it?
No, not at all. So when I was in the Marine Corps, I was deployed to Okinawa, Japan for 7 months. Uh-huh. And while there, I got interested in America's war in the Pacific and FDR's policies in that region. And so by exploring the war in the Pacific theater and the questions of justice that were answered by the progressives and the internationalist liberals in going to war, I think it helps clarify our current foreign policy situation and the world order as a whole. So it's a really helpful dissertation because I think World War II is the central and most important event of the last century, at least, and probably beyond.
So I have to refer you to, have you read James Michener, not his books on his, not the one on like Hawaii and but there's, he writes an autobiography, a memoir. It's a shorter memoir and it's really, The World Is My Home, a memoir it's called. It's really good. And it talks a lot about his time in the Pacific Theater during World War II. You should check it out. So anyway, that's my on-air tip as we're talking. Well, that's great. Well, that's exciting. How about this? Draining the Pentagon swamp, restoring pride in the military will require a massive effort. You were in the military, you know, and, yes. And you can, so you served, you saw, you know, I used to tell people elections, to have a good election, you have to be competent and people have to believe it. And I think right. If you're going to ask people to die for the country, you have to be able to be competent at being a killing machine, you know, military superiority, right. But they have to believe in it. What happens when right. People don't believe in it?
Well, you get the crisis we're having now where the percentage of new white recruits into the military has basically fallen in half in the last 5 years. And I think that's a product of the diversity, equity, inclusion, liberal push and the product of the COVID mandates, as well as incompetence. I think young Americans, especially young white American men, see that the political regime that's in power now despises them and that it isn't serving their interests and is explicitly racial in the way that it attacks and criticizes these young people. You know, the rhetoric on the left has ramped up to really disturbing levels in the way it describes white Americans. And you can see this in the attempts to rip down these statues and to destroy American history. The reconciliation after the Civil War is being undone. And I think that shows the left has radicalized and is trying to reopen, in a way, a kind of American Civil War. It's very disturbing.
Again, we're talking with Josiah Lippincott. He is a writer and a retired Marine. What is it, sir? What do they say about Marines? Always a Marine. Yeah, not a former Marine, but a retired Marine. Right. I got to get that right. But one of the things in here, and Gracia does this a lot, covers something people haven't been paying attention to. You know, this idea that there's military, current military, and certainly recently retired at senior levels who are strategizing and missing the point in this sense. Our system requires a commander in chief who's civilian. Not that you don't like the civilian commander in chief so much that, like Milley has at least implied, I don't presume to know the record enough or his mind, but he implies he knows better than Trump, President Trump, therefore he's going to withhold or he's going to, you know, that's actually unconstitutional against, but it's also how you get military dictatorships. I mean, and so the question I have for you, again, you're now knee deep in graduate studies and you've been I think you said a Claremont fellow and you've been around. How do you argue for something that maybe too many Americans don't even understand anymore?
Well, you do it by just showing the connection between their interest and then the policies that are being executed against their interest. What I want to do is to make clear to ordinary Americans, to voters, to citizens, how the modern military is working against the things they hold dear. There's a view on the right that the military is fundamentally conservative, dedicated to defending the country. And what I want to show is there has been a hostile ideological takeover of the military bureaucracy. And it's a problem for the right. It's a problem for conservatives and it's a problem for patriots. And so you're exactly right. It's, I think after January 6th, we effectively had a coup in the country that a unelected bureaucrat in the Pentagon, Mark Milley, basically seized control of the nation's military forces. And that's not supposed to happen. We need constitutional government. We need law and order. And we get that through having the legitimacy of having free and fair elections and then having the ability for elected politicians, elected leaders to carry out their will that the voters have given to them. And what we saw throughout the Trump administration was that the internal bureaucracy, the unelected mass in D.C. opposed him at every turn. They lied to him and they attempted to continue to carry out a foreign policy that Americans did not and have not ever voted for. So my project is to bring consent back into the equation for the American people when it comes to foreign policy.
We're talking, I agree, well said, too. And Josiah Lippincott, I'm glad you're writing your Substack. The Substack, I'll put it up on social media, is at Lippincott, his last name. There's two T's on the end of that cot and two P's, actually. You got two P's, two I's, two T's. Anyway, Lippincott, there's a lot of twinning there. Here's the $100 million gazillion question, because yes. I'm living in a house with one of these 12-year-old, you know, people. And I say that with generosity. Will Taylor Swift get involved in this election and endorse Biden or something crazy? Or is, because you wrote a piece on this and it's good. It's very good. I think it's interesting to talk about all these different things. But you acknowledge in the first sentence, I think, that she's a star. So is she a star, a tool, and she's going to fall for this? Or is she a star like Michael Jordan, who said Republicans buy sneakers?
Well, I would say Taylor Swift is not going to have an impact one way or the other on the election. I think her endorsement in 2018 was not enough to get Marsha Blackburn out of office in Tennessee. I don't think she's going to swing the election. I will point out that, it's Taylor Swift can't cure dementia. And she can't make inflation go away. And, you know, the Democrats can do whatever they want to try and gin up artificial support. I'm saying right now, Biden has no energy behind him. And I don't think he ever did. And if we had a free and fair election on paper ballots, same day voting, if we just did that in America, mandatory voter ID, and you got to register to vote, you know, and re-register to vote every couple of years. If you had free and fair elections where you don't have dead people on the rolls, Donald J. Trump would win that election 100 out of 100 times in America. It does not matter. It is only when you begin loosening the rules and flooding the country with illegal immigrants and getting all of this dark money involved that the Democrats are able to win. And that's where we can pin our hopes as conservatives, that we have the backing of the American citizenry. And it is only through extensive and extremely expensive ways that the Democrats are able to pull out any kind of electoral power in this country.
Well, I think it's really great. That piece on Taylor Swift, it's kind of like Trump. It's sort of kind of funny in a way, even though it makes a serious point that you don't get any benefit attacking someone who's popular with a lot of people in her music. His way of saying it, Trump said, I like her music 25% less now, which doesn't tell you if he ever liked it. It just tells you that if he liked it a little, he likes it a little less. And all right, Josiah Lippincott, thank you for being on the program. We'll have you on again. And very interesting. Thank you for writing with Ingracia, Carrie, and Paul over the finish line. I'll tease him about that when I see him later in the week. And we'll talk again soon. I got to take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
The Monroe Doctrine was established on December 2nd, 1823. It was articulated in President James Monroe's 7th annual written message to Congress. Monroe wrote that the European powers were obligated to limit their influence in the Western Hemisphere. The Western Hemisphere, after all, was the domain of influence belonging to the United States. The age of colonization of the New World was coming to a close. Ever since Columbus discovered the Americas, the European powers raced to establish colonies to enrich the mother countries. With the United States being fully established as an independent nation, President Monroe made clear that the United States would no longer tolerate further colonization or puppet monarchs in the Americas. Once established, the Monroe Doctrine became a cornerstone for American foreign policy for decades and decades to come. In 1865, the Monroe Doctrine was invoked to support Mexican President Benito Juarez. U.S. support enabled the Mexican president to successfully revolt against Emperor Maximilian, who was established in Mexico by the French government. In 1904, President Roosevelt used the Monroe Doctrine when European creditors threatened Latin American countries with armed intervention to collect on debts. The Monroe Doctrine also played a significant role in stopping the Soviet Union from building missile sites in Cuba in the 1960s. Still today, the Monroe Doctrine matters. The Chinese communists are constantly increasing their influence in our hemisphere. Their involvement in the Panama Canal is contributing to our ongoing fentanyl crisis. The Monroe Doctrine still matters, and it must be invoked here in America to put a stop to the influence of Chinese communism. The Monroe Doctrine exists because America pioneered a very special form of government. Our constitutional system and limited government allow for a country that allows individual freedom to flourish, and that is worth protecting. Not only is our system special, but it's wholly incompatible with other forms of government. The Monroe Doctrine exists to keep these other systems, from monarchy to communism, out of our hemisphere.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. As leader of the free world, America has a responsibility to stay strong in economics, industry, morality, and military capability. Never hesitating to say America first. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, you'll see why the best foreign policy begins with a strong America. Join the conversation at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. I tell you, I don't know whether to be sad or angry about this next story and this next topic. It's insane. It's insane that this is happening in America. Peter Navarro, who served for the entire Trump term in the White House, he was one of his senior advisors on trade, on manufacturing. He was a Democrat his whole life. He ran for mayor of, I think he ran for mayor of San Diego, maybe ran for Congress once, a Democrat, a pro-jobs Democrat. And sort of about 24, 23 years ago, he realized that everybody was caving to the Chinese, and he wrote about that. He wrote a book about it. He did a documentary about it. He was just a voice that was arguing about, hey, this is a disaster for the American people and what's happening to our jobs. And he became really famous for it. His book was called Death by China, written with Greg Autry. And so he's a professor too, Peter Navarro, a longtime professor, 25, 30 years. I think he went to Harvard for his PhD. He's really kind of a genius character. So he serves all that time with Trump, and he had ideas on what could be done after the election in 2020. He saw evidence that made him think that there was questions about the election. He thought there was ways that it could be delayed to try to figure it out. I don't think he ever thought of himself as an insurrectionist. He was never convicted of insurrection, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he was they attempted to call him before the January 6th Select Committee that Liz Cheney and Nancy Pelosi engineered. It was a 17-month committee. It spent $19 million, so more than $1 million a month. They destroyed their own records. They lied about what happened. They were not open about anything. And they were really brainwashing the American people. They interviews after the fact that they were interviewing people, and they said, oh, yeah, I forget if it was I don't think it was Adam Schiff, but it was one of the folks like him that said, yeah, you know, oh, Adam, no, it was Adam Kinzinger. He said, yeah, you know, we hired an ABC producer, a TV producer, because we wanted to, get the narrative going in our direction. We wanted people to believe what we were saying. So Peter Navarro gets called before this committee. It's an obvious witch hunt. And he says, no, I'm not reporting. Because why? Because I had executive privilege. I was working for the president. I'm not reporting. And they rejected that. And he said, no, he didn't care. Anyway, they ratched him, notched him up for contempt of Congress. And then they referred it to Biden's DOJ, who prosecuted it. And so in Washington, D.C., there's no chance you're getting a fair trial. There's no chance that the jury. Because why? Not because the people of D.C. are bad. The people of D.C. are fine. But the people of D.C. have been exposed to $19 million of Liz Cheney, Nancy Pelosi brainwashing, and a lot more. And the lies they told about it weren't confronted by the press. The press did not stop and say, what are you talking about? That didn't happen like that. Wait a second. We got to ask some questions. We don't understand. There was a pipe bomb, two pipe bombs, but nothing happened. You never caught anybody. Wait a second. There was a gallows somebody built, and we can't find the gallows guy. There was undercover cops and feds involved. They didn't do any of that. They just looked for victims. They looked for people to make into victims to persecute and prosecute, lawfare, and in this case, jail time. And so they got a 4-month jail sentence, and they're about to take, he's appealed it, but to the Court of Appeals, but it won't go well. The DC Court of Appeals is rotten. And they're about to send the guy to jail, federal jail, for 4 months because he wouldn't talk to Congress because he thought he had privilege protection. This is persecution of Trump supporters. There's nothing he said or did that could be construed as having a role in things. But even if he did, there's lots of ways other than sending him to jail. And Eric Holder, by the way, was held in contempt of Congress. He was never prosecuted. I mean, the idea of the selective prosecution of supporters of Trump and Trump himself, I don't know, 4 years ago, I would have said, oh, it's crazy. You're not going to go that far. They've gone that far and more. And they're not stopping. They're not shamed into stopping. They're not legally pressed by their own, so-called justice system. Nobody's pressing them to stop the persecution. So you think they're going to stop? No, they're not going to stop. There's no way they're going to stop. They're going to keep going. This Peter Navarro is now a hostage. He's a political hostage to this crazy, crazy Biden administration and this movement of people that are they're taking away from us our great American legal system that had checks and balances. When people went too far, there was a way to stop the madness. They're taking that away from us. Peter Navarro shouldn't go to jail for a day, not for a minute. And they're going to plow right ahead and do it. And we shouldn't be ashamed because we didn't do it, but we should be worried. We should be devastated. Devastated is right. We should be devastated. This is gutting our legal system. I told you too many times, the crown jewel of America is not jewels. It's not a crown and jewels. It's not a ring with jewels. It's not a scepter with jewels. It's not a cloak with jewels on it. That's London. That's England. In America, the crown jewel is our Constitution and the rule of law coupled with our founding values. Now, those values were Christian, Judeo-Christian, you can call it, but really Christian. People had honor, integrity, seriousness. There was a difference between kids and adults. It was about truth and it was making sure our system had a fair chance. That was America. Our crown jewel is the Constitution, the rule of law, and our founding values. And these people, Joe Biden and his people, are just destroying it in front of us. And most people think the only way to go forward is to do the same thing when the other side has power and go after John Brennan and Clapper and everybody for lying. Go after the people who have done the destructive things like Fannie Willis and others. I say we should have a system that stops this madness in its tracks and keeps Peter Navarro from becoming a hostage, a political hostage, and lets him be free. All right, that's all I've got. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.